This is a CBC podcast. Big news! Terry O'Reilly, the guru of advertising, is now podcasting. Download the new Age of Persuasion podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting.
Hello, and welcome to part three of the current podcast. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Coming-of-age stories featuring teenaged boys fumbling their way into adulthood are fixtures in our popular culture. The Catcher in the Rye, The Outsiders, Rebel Without a Cause, stories with one common thread, danger. Protagonists doing risky things, being it drinking vodka all day long or racing cars. And it looks as if art is imitating life. The statistics prove it. Among Canadian boys and young men aged 15 to 25, accidents are by far the leading cause of death. Suicide and homicide are right behind in second and third place. On top of that, Canadian men are three times more likely to commit suicide than Canadian women. And more than 90% of the people who die in workplace injuries in Canada are men. This morning, as part of our project on demographic change, SHIFT, we are asking why this is such a dangerous demographic. And for their help, we're joined by two young men. Michael Champagne is 23 years old. He is the founder of a group called Aboriginal Youth Opportunities. It helps young people with everything from leaving gangs to learning how to apply for welfare. He's in Winnipeg. And Corey Biaggi is a 26-year-old mountain climber and backcountry skier. He's in Vancouver. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Good morning.
Michael Champagne, let's begin with you. How surprised are you by those numbers that paint your demographic group as so dangerous?
Actually, I'm not that surprised at all. It actually lines up with what it's kind of like to live it.
Tell me more.
Well, I don't know. When you talk about the fact that accidents, quotation, are the number one leading cause of death, I think about various roles that I've had where I've seen the effects of accidents that people have had either at work or out and about, and speaking specifically about the devastating ripple effects that come from suicides and homicides growing up in the north end of Winnipeg, and coming from a community like Shamattawa, I recognize that suicides and homicides are debilitating the populations of young people to be able to support ourselves and our communities.
Corey Biaggi, why do you think young men are at such an elevated risk of having an accident?
Not too sure why. I mean, out here, it's probably a little different. I mean, there's a lot of things to do. When you're young male, you're healthy, you're here, you're that. So, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that that's the leading cause of young male to die. I mean, you shouldn't really be dying of illness and age because you're young, you're fit, and healthy. What else are you going to die from?
Well, you know, you like extreme sports. What is it that you love about adventure sports?
What I like about them is it's just the feeling of accomplishment, the freedom, you get that little bit of a rush. But, I mean, I don't really consider myself being a huge risk taker. I don't feel that there's a lot of risk involved with a lot of things just because I'm in control of my own situation. I think it's actually more dangerous to actually drive to Whistler than it is to actually ski on Whistler.
Hmm. Although most people who take risks would say that.
Most people.
True.
but I guess.
I mean, Corey, tell us a little bit more of what you do. You know, spell it out for me. What are you doing up there, Whistler?
What am I doing out there, Whistler? Okay. Basically, my activities are, I'm an avid rock climber. I rock climb quite a bit. I dabble in mountaineering, ice climbing. I love backcountry skiing, not because of, it's dangerous and it's risky. It's just because it's kind of nice to get away from the crowds. I've been doing that for about 10 years now, I think.
And when you started, did it feel riskier to you?
Yeah, because you have no idea what you're doing. You're really scared. When I was younger, I was young and naive. Now I'm kind of more seasoned. I'm kind of a little bit more reserved, and I kind of know the deal now. You go out there, you go climb, you go alpine climbing, and you can get really, really scared. I mean, you can have like a close call or something, be like, ugh. You know, that puts life in perspective, and you know, you look at the sunset differently. For the next week, you kind of look at everything and are more thankful for every little bit. It takes you a little bit of a scare to realize that you are still human and that life is still precious. So,
but you're describing then coming up really close to a risk and then getting away with it without injury.
without
what you're
injury.
Just describing. You're getting you got away with something that could have gone the other way with just another inch.
Yeah,
is what you're telling me.
It's definitely. I mean, the sports that I do are definitely more risky than playing Scrabble or chess. So.
Yeah, so you understand the idea of being in accidents. Michael, how are teenage boys and young men faring in your community?
Well, I think that was it was really awesome listening to Corey talk because he said some things that I really, really liked, things that I think young men in my community really gravitate to, freedom, fun things, right, a sense of accomplishment. I think all of those things are desirable feelings that young men strive for in our communities. And I think for the most part, those are achieved. A lot of the times people don't approve of the means that young men take to achieve those feelings, but you know, due to a lot of situations, poverty, intergenerational effects, community demographics, the young men growing up in my community are infused with a lot of negativity, I think, and it kind of leads them to maybe take risks where they are exposed to dangerous situations a little bit more frequently.
Okay. You're talking a bit of code there for me. Can you spell out what the risks are? Are you talking about gangs?
Yes, ma'am. In my community, there are a lot of different gangs. Not even necessarily street gangs. There are families. There are informal groups. And these circles of people make negative decisions. They do illegal things. They drink. They do drugs. They make decisions that aren't healthy for themselves or for the community. And they're kind of perpetuating a cycle that is really crappy. And we really need to fight to get out of it. Mm. And that's kind of what we do at Aboriginal Youth Opportunities. We try to set that example just by a group of young men trying to be that positive force in one another's lives so that we can be that anti-gang, so that we can be that positive reason that leads these young men to appreciate things like the sunset a little bit more, to understand that life is more precious and be able to appreciate the relationships that they have. And we can get rid of this bullshit macho attitude that these young men are fed every single day in the media, because to me, that's not what a man is. A man is somebody that takes care of their community, is in touch with themselves, and is able to share their gifts with the people around them.
I've got a clip I want to play for you now.
Sure.
It's Gord Tuck. He owns a forestry company in British Columbia. His introduction to the industry was traumatic, to say the least. Have a listen.
I was injured in a logging accident when I was 18 years old. I got crushed between a log loader and a log. So I ended up getting my left leg amputated above the knee. And then through various rehabilitations and prosthetics, and now I'm back at it. Forestry, it's like a male-dominated job, and it's hard work, and, you know, everything is so big and heavy, but a lot of young guys think they're invincible, right? You think nothing's ever going to happen to them. Young guys play hard, they work hard, and they never think about the consequences of what could happen if something goes wrong.
Okay, well, that's Gord Tuck, who owns a forestry company in B.C. Corey, does his description of young men ring true to you?
Yes and no. I think it is true that young men do think that they're invincible, and they think that nothing's going wrong with them. But when I go with all my friends and everything like that, you'd be surprised at how much safety does play a role. I mean, what you guys see and what you guys represent, it's usually, you know, you just think that we just don't think. We just, you know, drop into a ski line or we jump on a rock face without thinking about it. But, I mean, there's hours of preparation, you know. We make sure that the snowpack is solid before we drop into it. We know that our abilities are going to be good enough to ski it.
When you started, were you like that?
When I started...
And did you see that when you started?
When I was younger, I was very impressionable, for sure. I'll tell you that. I started kind of hanging out with a lot of guys that I really respected in the climbing community, and I really looked up to them. And I always thought that, you know, I gotta really, you know, bring my A game. I really got to step it up just so I can feel like I belong with this group. And maybe I didn't, you know, did things that were necessarily the safest. You know, I probably did things just to try to impress instead of really thinking about my consequence. Not because I didn't know, like I knew that if things went wrong, it would gone really, really wrong. But for some reason, I just, I didn't really, it was kind of like on the back of my mind, but it was never what my full concentration was. Later on, obviously, I learned to realize that they didn't care, and actually they had less respect for me for doing these kind of things, because I wasn't just putting my life at risk, I was putting their life at risk. And that's not cool.
Michael, I'm wondering what you thought of what Gord Tuck said there.
That really hit me pretty hard, listening to what Gord said. In my day job, I work with an organization called Safe Workers of Tomorrow, and I travel around Manitoba and speaking to groups of young people about health and safety at work. And I think that that description that he gave of young men is 100% bang on. For some reason, young men, when they walk into the workplace, they have this sense of, you know, they need to know what they're doing, and they have to pretend like, you know, they have 100% confidence, and they don't ask questions. I really feel for Gord, and I'm so proud of him for being able to get back to work and continue working in that industry, because that shows me such strength and such courage, well, and that's a role model to me.
Why do you think, Michael, that young men get hurt so much more than women in the workplace?
I think we're more likely to take risks. I think a lot of the stuff, even that Corey was saying, is true about young men. Like, and I'm not an exception to the rule myself. I've taken risks where I definitely, looking back, I shouldn't have done that because it wasn't safe. But I was being careless. I thought I knew what I was doing, and in my head, I knew better.
I'd like you guys to hold tight while I bring someone else into this conversation.
Sure.
Daniel Kruger has been listening in from a studio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He is a researcher at the School of Public Health and Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan. Good morning, Daniel Kruger.
Good morning to you all.
Well, first of all, Daniel, as you listen to Michael and Corey, what are you thinking?
Familiar stories. You know, I really connect to a lot of the examples that people have given, both this feeling of invincibility and also the events when someone actually does get very hurt. And I think that the roots of this risk-taking go really deep in our evolutionary history. It all goes back to the slightly different roles that men and women play in reproduction. And that's that women tend to invest more in offspring. You know, they have pregnancy, childbirth, breastfeeding. And because they invest more, they're more selective of the partners that they're looking for. So men actually have to compete for women. And over the course of our evolutionary history, some men have been more successful than others. So men are competing for partners and for those things that make them attractive to partners, such as social status and resources. And across cultures, men who have higher social status and resources do have higher what we call reproductive success.
Okay.
They have more partners and more offspring.
You raised a lot of things that I want to ask there, because you're looking at our evolutionary history. What have you learned about why women outlive men?
Well, there are a lot of different mechanisms behind this, everything from genetic, where men have an incomplete set of sex chromosomes, so harmful mutations are more likely to be expressed. We know there's physiological differences, testosterone, you know, this hormone that gives men our secondary sexual characteristics. So we think of this as, you know, something that's necessary and good. It also interferes with our other biological systems. It interferes with our immune system, so we're less resistant to infection. It interferes with our digestive system, so we don't have the as great ability to process dietary fats. And definitely we have higher risk-taking behaviors. You know, both accidents and violence are much higher for men than for women. And it is particularly true of this, you know, young male age group, you know, the so-called risky young male syndrome, where men are dying at three times the rate of women in this 18 to 25 year age group. And it's mostly from these direct behavioral causes, accidents, homicide, and suicide.
Okay, so you're saying that the risk-taking behavior in males really kicks in around puberty?
Right. It really does seem to align with sexual maturity and entrance into what we call mating competition. You know, just when men are starting to compete with each other, we see increases in testosterone that coincide with this behavioral pattern. And if you look longer in the lifespan, men's risk-taking actually, you know, peaks in young adulthood. And then when they get married, they start to settle down, you know, in more ways than one. And especially when men start taking care of children, their risky behavior drops dramatically. So they're shifting from what we call mating effort towards parental investment, which is a much longer term, you know, risk adverse strategy where they're thinking about their partner and their offspring. The reason why the behavior is much riskier earlier on is because they're still competing for partners.
And of course, they've got this riskier behavior. When we heard Michael and Corey talking about the risks in adventure sport and the risks in gangs, that intensity of male competition, can I connect some dots and see that young men are hardwired to take risk then?
I think there's a lot of parallels, and it does seem that, you know, overall males do take a lot more risks and seem to have, you know, greater tolerance for risk and sensation seeking than women. Of course, the environment that you're in is going to influence you. You know, if you have a stable environment where there isn't a lot of violence around, you know, that might not be so prevalent. But it also connects with our ancestral history where, you know, people did live much shorter lives and did have, you know, shorter time horizons. And also we know that there were high levels of both within group competition, you know, men competing with each other, as well as between group violence. We have an evolutionary history where once we became the dominant species, you know, we didn't have to worry about other predators attacking us as much as we had to worry about each other. And certainly, you know, I think what we call, you know, group competition is heavily ingrained in our psychology.
Okay, Daniel Kruger, I've got somebody else I want to bring into this conversation. David Hatfield has been listening to all of this. He is a leadership consultant and facilitator, as well as the Canadian coordinator of International Men's Day. He is in Vancouver. Welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what do you think, David Hatfield, about Daniel Kruger's explanation of young male behavior?
Well, I'm really struck by all the speakers this morning, Corey and Michael as well, and how age-old this conversation really is. I can imagine our ancestors way back having these kind of conversations of concern about the young men in the community. And for me, it brings up something that has become, through my career working with boys and men now, conspicuous in its absence, which is any kind of systemic and widely available rites of passage processes. Very few communities in the country are actually doing that kind of work.
Okay, so when you say there's no rite of passage, why is that a problem? What do you see as a result of that?
Well, I'll turn to an American mythologist who's been influential in my thinking, Michael Mead. He's done a lot of work in this area and continues to do so. So I'll bring in a synopsis of a quote he's famous for, and it goes like this. If we leave youth out of the circle, they will burn down the village to feel the warmth. The reason I chose the quote is for the word burn. There's a fieriness to male youth. There's supposed to be a fieriness to male youth. And when we, as a community, when we do not invite and acknowledge and welcome that fire in a purposeful way, it's meant to, it has to burn anyway. So it leaks out sideways or it goes underground. And for me, it comes out in these expressions that have been spoken about by particularly Michael and Corey. Vancouverites may remember in the mid-90s, we had a real rash of street racing deaths out in Richmond, involving street racers and also innocent pedestrians, bystanders, etc. And young men, as a part of their development from boyhood into early onset of early adult manhood, have a need, as Corey was really describing, to test themselves against something that matters.
So in other words, with those street races, they were creating their own rite of passage.
Absolutely. And for listeners who are hearing us today, I encourage adults to consider how we initiated ourselves if we felt like we were not given a formal process by adults in our community. And I've collected some amazing hair-raising stories out of that that really exemplify the powerful need both young men and women have.
Give us one of them.
This comes from a friend here in BC, and he gave me permission to use this story. So he grew up in rural Ontario. This is now a family man who's a shiatsu therapist, does beautiful work with healing, and is a very strong family man in the community. But at the age of whatever, 15, 16, he and a friend found a railway trestle about 200 feet above a river, and they were on acid at the time, which is a part of hallmark of rite of passage, is the desire for an altered state. And they went across halfway to the trestle, and I thought, you know, the game would be that they waited for the train and tried to outrun it. But no, they actually, when the train came, they would climb underneath the trestle and hang on to the beams and literally be shaken violently as tens of thousands of pounds of locomotive was screaming overhead, knowing that if they lost their grip, they were dead, absolutely. Hmm. And that's not the end of the story. After doing so, of course, they would have to hide that experience from adults who care about their safety, which is the reverse of how a rite of passage that's done formally would work. So the adults would actually know what's going on, be welcoming some kind of challenge that's not that life-threatening, obviously, and help the young men test themselves against a strong experience like that, a life and death line. So because that never happened, they didn't just do it once, they did it repetitively. They went back and did it over and over again.
So how do you think expectations and ideas of masculinity fit into what you're telling us?
Well, for me, what I see in my work with boys and young men, and this is coming from close to 20,000 boys and young men I've worked with, is around that age of the cohort we're talking about, the desire to embrace the male role, whatever that is perceived to be by a young man, gets really intense. And I liked Daniel's description of it around the mating effort. I think that's a strong driver of it. Young guys, they're trying to prove, yeah, I'm a young guy and there's things I can do. I've got skills here or there and I'm trying to measure up in the eyes of my peer group and my community. At the same time, my peer group and community are giving me message about, you're becoming a young man. You're going to finish school. What are you going to do after that? What kind of vocation do you want to have? So I think they start really caring a lot more about how they're performing in their masculine role. And the concerning thing I find in that, and I want to make a point too, that there's a lot of goodness that comes from that whole journey as well. But the thing that concerns me the most is the movement towards what I consider or see as isolation. So part of that gender role script that we're all familiar with is around invulnerability, particularly around emotional expression. So what I see is boys are starting to disavow and marginalize and suppress their own difficult feelings of sadness, fear, uncertainty, etc. I'm tying into Corey's story here when he said there was times when I was kind of pushing it to try and look good and maybe to do so, maybe suppressing some levels of fear. Now,
right.
he got away with it, as you said. He had some good mentors in the mix, which is
well, I want to pick up on something else that you're saying about isolation, and I want to bring Michael Champagne in on that one because the one thing we touched on it just briefly is suicide. Mm. Rates of suicide are 3 times higher for men than women. Michael Champagne, you've seen that. Why do you think that is?
I think that there's a lot of pressure, and the pressures that young men feel to belong. I really, really did appreciate the quote that was shared about leaving young men out of the circle and how they will burn down the community to feel the warmth. I feel like a lot of young men don't feel like they're able to transition from being a boy into being a man, and I really do agree that that rite of passage becomes super important, because without it, now we are 18, 19, 20-year-old dudes floating around, and we act like boys, but we're in the bodies of men, and we look around in the media, and we get these distorted images, and when that doesn't match the way we're feeling, because those images tell us not to feel sad, not to feel hurt, not to outwardly express our emotions, like you said, when that conflict happens inside of us, we have to figure out a way to deal. To feel like there's no way that the things I'm feeling can match what the world expects me. And so the only thing I can do suicide. It's a really big problem, and young men can't talk about it. They can't.
Daniel Kruger, what do you think can be done to address the dangers associated with being a young man?
Well, I think we've heard some excellent suggestions already. I think this rite of passage idea would be nice, because right now there isn't a lot of structure, you know, to young adolescents' development. You know, before we lived in extended families, and there were a lot of older role models who were in our social scene, and we could, you know, learn what it was like to be a man, you know, to be mature and responsible and whatnot. And today, I think to a much greater extent, you know, we're bombarded by these market-driven media images, and certainly we know that risky and dangerous things sell. So we're really seeing sort of like a skewed representation of what it means to be, you know, an adult male. And, you know, kids are certainly following these influences in popular culture.
Corey, I want to pick up on that then. What advice would you give to a 13 or 14-year-old boy who is about to enter that demographic that you're just leaving, that 15 to 25?
I'd say take your time. Learn the skill. That's probably the most important. I mean, people would just be excited that you're there, not because you are better than they are. I think with a lot of young males, they have it's a very male trait to always be in competition with each other. You know, either be, you know, I'm better than you, I got a better job, I can do things bigger than you, I can do things better than you. I think we need to really encourage the fact that, you know, what keeps men happy and challenged and successful is the competition. So I'm not going to say, you know, don't go skiing, don't go climbing, don't go have, you know, fun in the mountains, because the mountains can be a very safe and fun environment for a young person to learn, and you learn a lot about yourself. But my biggest advice, I guess, for a 13-year-old would be just learn the skill. Don't rush into it. Don't try to impress anyone, because you're not really impressing anyone.
Michael Champagne, what advice would you give?
I would say because a lot of the programs that I work in and around and try to create are targeted specifically at 13 and 14-year-old boys from my community. And it's out of the relationships I've been able to grow with hundreds of young men from the inner city of Winnipeg. The thing that I always try to relay to the young men that I work with is about emotion. It's about... it's a three-step process, and I deliberately get all mushy, and I get the eye rolls all the damn time, but you know what? I got to do it because these young men need to feel the love from another man. And so the thing that I always share is, number one, you are important. Number two, find yourself and figure out what works with you. Number three, find your gift, because you got lots of them. And number four, share it. Share it with the people around you. And in doing that, you will become a more complete person, and you can figure out what it means to you to be a real man.
Well, we almost have to end it there. We've got about 30 seconds left. David Hatfield, what would your advice be to a 13 or 14-year-old?
Yeah, you're not alone. The things that you're going through, other guys are totally going through. Look for mentors. Look for people around you that you trust and respect, male and female, and be close to them. Ask them your questions. Risk revealing some of the things that are going on in your life that are challenging for you, and you'll be rewarded with some positive relationships that will help you see you through these tough times. You're not alone.
Gentlemen, we have to leave it there. Thank you, all of you, for being part of this discussion.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much
for having us.
Michael Champagne is the founder of Aboriginal Youth Opportunities. Corey Biaggi is a mountain climber and backcountry skier. David Hatfield is the Canadian coordinator of International Men's Day. Daniel Kruger is at the School of Public Health and Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Well, that is it for this podcast today. If you have any thoughts you'd like to add to this discussion or anything you hear on The Current, drop us a line. Go to our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent, and click on Contact Us. Or you can call us on our feedback line, toll-free, 1-877-287-7366. You can also find us on Twitter at TheCurrentCBC. Or write us a letter at Post Office Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. Thanks for listening to The Current Podcast. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti.
Looking for more CBC podcasts? Go to cbc.ca/podcasting.